President Trump has issued basically a new ultimatum to Iran. He continues to say we're winning this war and diplomacy is leading the way. Or is it? We've talked a lot this morning about what the U.S. side is doing, the military side, and even what things look in Europe. But now we want to look at the other side of this equation, because you can't understand at all what's going on with the U.S.-Iran war unless you understand what things look like from the other side here. And we're going to talk today to one of our favorite guests, Trita Parsi, who is the executive vice president of Quincy Institute, and somebody who had some dealings and negotiations with the 2015 JCPOA that was developed over in a painful long period of time, wrote a book on that, which I found utterly fascinating. So he has got some great insights into what is and isn't possible on the Iranian side. And we're looking forward to getting into that today. Trita, welcome to the show as always.
Great to be with you again.
Well, listen, you know, let's just start off just right off the bat with the Truth Social that Trump put out at 7:30 this morning. You know, basically saying on the first hand that, you know, the United States is in serious discussions with a new and more reasonable regime to end our military operations, and great progress has been made so far. Now, if you just stopped right there, you'd go, oh, great, maybe things are going pretty good. But then, kind of as you and I were chatting on before the phone, if you're only listening to certain media, you're not going to know about what's really going on. You may be tended to believe that. We're going to get into that part that Gary's highlighting in a second. But let me just ask you right off the top. Is there a new, more reasonable regime in Iran now that the Ayatollah has been assassinated?
He's right in the sense that there is a change, but it's a change within the regime rather than a change in regime. And the tendency has been that many of the folks that were more moderate in their context have been replaced with more hawkish people. In fact, the Israelis appear to have deliberately targeted people who they thought Trump would negotiate with in order to kill off his off-ramps. And as a result, the nature of the current state of the Islamic Republic is one that is more hawkish, more bullish, and more confident that their conduct in this war ultimately will bring them to a much stronger position than they were in during the last couple of years of Ayatollah Khamenei's reign. So in that sense, yeah, perhaps one can phrase it the way he is. He's very loose in the way he defines things. And I think there may be some conversations or messages being exchanged. I doubt that there's very serious negotiations going on right now. And when I say that, I mean because serious negotiation requires a much, much more realistic negotiation strategy and demands rather than the ones that we so far have seen from the administration.
And look, you also have to be, even on our own side, you've got to be realistic about what is and isn't possible and just how much leverage, mileage you can get out of rhetoric. Trump has lived in rhetoric. I mean, ever since he started running in 2015 when he first announced, and then all the way through and everything in between there. He's done a lot of that even with some of the military stuff, especially in the Venezuela operation, and he has been pretty successful at some of that. It seems to have run into a buzzsaw here, actually. And Gary, if you can put that Truth Social back up, because this seems to me that some of the teeth on that saw are starting to break off, because now he says, we will conclude that our lovely Strait of Hormuz isn't opened up. We will conclude our lovely stay in Iran by blowing up and completely obliterating all of their electric generating plants, oil wells, Karg Island, and maybe even in all desalinization plants. Just first of all, is that going to scare Iran to make them say, oh, snap, man, we better make some action here pretty quick. I guess we better open up the Hormuz and give Trump what he wants.
I mean, look, if the Iranians could be scared into surrendering, that would have happened before the war started. I think from their standpoint, they're feeling confident, perhaps too confident, that they have the ability to strike back very hard in manners that will be more painful to the U.S. side and to the Israeli and the GCC side than it will be to the Iranians. So, for instance, yes, it will be devastating for the Iranians to have their desalination plants destroyed. But Iran has actually more natural water than the GCC states do. So if the Iranians then retaliate by targeting the desalination plants in the GCC states, that will create a much graver disaster for them. The same is true for Israel. Same thing is also true for Israel's power grids, etc. They're more sensitive and vulnerable than the Iranian ones are. So whatever escalatory path Trump has been looking at, the Iranians appear to be able to match that and make sure that the U.S. or its allies end up paying equal, if not even a higher cost. So I don't see an escalatory path out of this debacle for Trump. He should be looking for de-escalatory paths out of this debacle rather than escalatory paths.
Well, that's what he should be doing, but it doesn't seem that he is doing that. And he keeps on talking about this whole issue about negotiations that are going on. I'm going to touch on that in a second. But this right here actually was put on Fox News a few minutes ago, put out by Caroline Leavitt, saying, hey, you know what? We're keeping on winning on military. So far, we've continued to obliterate Iran's defense industrial base with nearly 70% of their missile, drone, and naval production facilities and shipyards damaged or destroyed so far. But then, you know, let me ask you, you know, your understanding of, is that the case? Because those are things on the surface, yet we see, as this example here with Yaz Granite Fortress, that many of the facilities have been put underground into mountains like this one here. And so the question is, have we really gotten 70% of them, or has it been 70% of what we can see on the ground?
I think it certainly is closer to the latter than the former. And also, we can just take a look at how the Iranians are performing in this war. They're going at this very systematically. They have taken out a lot of the radar systems of the U.S. and Israel. And as a result, the reason why fewer Iranian missiles nevertheless have a much higher penetration rate than what they did before is not just because of Israel running out of interceptors, but rather also because the radar systems are being blown up. And as a result, the U.S. and Israel are not seeing these missiles early enough to be able to intercept them. This is an argument that Jennifer Canova is doing in Responsible Statecraft today, a great article that I recommend everyone to read, because it shows again that it isn't sufficient for us to just run around with some statistics about the number of places we've hit, et cetera. That's not what ultimately matters, because not every site is of equal importance. And the Iranians seem to have been going at this very strategically and making sure that they're making both the GCC states and the Israelis extremely vulnerable, and not just relying on them running out of interceptors, but going after other things that essentially makes it more difficult for the United States to actually launch major offensive operations rather than just the defensive operations.
And, you know, what is going to be the prospect that we can bludgeon the Iranian side, you know, into submission here? Because obviously, whether it's 70% of the facilities above ground, whatever, there's no doubt that we've inflicted tremendous amounts of damage and continue to do so. In the Iranian calculation, as best you can understand, would they have foreseen this level of attacks for an extended period of time? And do they think that they can endure this for an extended period of time? Not just can they keep firing missiles, but can they keep absorbing the receiving missiles?
So early in the war, it seemed like their expectation and their preparation was that they would be able to withstand a war for about 3 months. Now, I don't know if they're exaggerating or if something has changed in the equation, but you're seeing more and more signaling that they believe that they can withstand this for at least a year. Part of the reason why that may be is because they're actually raking in much more money as a result of them controlling the Strait of Hormuz and the oil prices having gone up as much as they have. They're actually selling more oil than they were before, and they're selling at almost three times the price than they were before. So, you know, paradoxically, the war has ended up becoming a sanctions relief de facto for the Iranians. So these factors all coming together, it appears to me that they have also shifted towards a longer strategy. They're not shooting as many missiles at Israel any longer, but they're nevertheless getting through at a larger number. And according to Haaretz, they're getting through 80% of the time, which is quite dramatic. And I think they probably could be shooting far more right now, but they don't want to because they're pacing themselves for this going into a longer period of time. And I think at the end of the day, despite the fact that they're taking huge amount of hits, they do have a sustainability on their end that probably is superior to that of the Israelis. But also, more importantly, they don't have to outlast Trump or play the long game. They just have to play the longer game. They just need to outlast him for 1 week. And Trump's ability to withstand this is not for a year. I mean, we have midterm elections in just 6 or so months. So his ability to continue this, to me, does not appear to be more than 3 or 4 or 5 weeks at this point. So, and it seems quite clear to me that the Iranians could withstand themselves to them.
Right. And then, and there's a lot of physical evidence to support that contention. As a matter of fact, you've got J.P. Morgan published this right here that showed that these regions of the different regions of the world are going to start to have serious ramifications with petroleum products ranging everywhere from April 15th to April 1st through the April 20th. Depending on what part of the world you're talking about, but those things are, I mean, that's practically tomorrow. You have issues with food because of a lot of the fertilizers and other kinds of feedstocks that are also blocked out, that are coming, starting to cause problems everywhere, especially in places that can least afford it. And then here, this one by Jerome Powell just an hour ago, he's saying, listen, our national debt is growing substantially faster than the economy says, and it is not sustainable. It will not end well if we don't do something fairly soon. Now, I know President Trump doesn't like Jerome Powell, but he's been pretty sober in his assessments here. And when you're looking at, we're already saying we need to add another $200 billion in a supplemental for this war. We're trying to get $1.5 trillion, some crazy number, for next year, too. At the time, the price of oil is going up, and it's only going to keep going up. I think it's at 112 right now for the Brent crude, 103, I think, for WTI. And those things are only going to continue to go farther north. Does Trump have even 3 or 4 months to wait?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I can tell you this as well. If he goes in with ground troops, I think those 3 to 4 weeks will shrink down to 5 days, perhaps, at most. If the ground troop invasion in and of itself just ends his path of being able to get out of this war while still having some sort of a convincible narrative of victory. I think it's also very important to understand the paper price of oil is not where it should be. You have the actual price of oil that probably is closer to $150, but the paper price, because of manipulation, because of Trump's oil interventions, which are, to me, shockingly effective. I mean, that the tweet that you mentioned in the beginning, that just came right before the markets opened up again, right? This is just the way Trump is doing it. Every Monday morning, he has a tweet of that kind to try to give hope that not only is he's winning handsomely, and this will end relatively soon. He's in control, all to just calm down the markets and give himself more time. They've bought it for some time. I don't think they can buy it for much longer, because at some point, the actual price is going to impose itself on the paper price of oil. And then things will go way up, and then you will see a major shock on gas prices, food prices, all of those different things.
Well, yeah, I mean, the evidence certainly supports what you're saying there. And let's take a look at what President Trump is trying to do to mitigate further this. You mentioned his comments here, and we've shown a statistic on the price chart. You can see where the 48-hour deadline that said, that made a big drop. And then some other things. There was a 15-point plan that made it go down for a little while. But every time it starts going back up pretty quick, and this one doesn't seem to have moved much at all down based on his comment here. But one of the things he's hanging his hat on is that, hey, you know what? I'm still leaving diplomacy open. Here was Witkoff a couple of days ago talking about that very thing.
The Iranians, there are some people there who have denied that we're negotiating. I think we know, everybody in this room knows we are negotiating. It's clear. Some ships are coming through. We may have a different definition of negotiating than they do, where there may be people within their system today who just don't have the ability to admit it. But we're talking to them.
What is your definition of negotiation?
Well, my definition of real negotiating would be right here, and we don't leave until we're done. And we've offered that, and we think there will be meetings this week. We're certainly hopeful for it.
And what do you think? I mean, do you think there really will be meetings this week, and they're hopeful for it? Because, I mean, I got to ask, given what happened in June of 2025 and given what happened at the start of this war here at the end of February, upon what basis would any rational person in the Iranian government enter into negotiations with this guy who was the one who led the last round?
And it may very well not be with this guy. It may very well be with others in the White House who still have some semblance of credibility to be able to negotiate. Look, I think there's an element of truth into what Witkoff has said there, which is that the U.S.'s definition, or the Trump administration's definition, of negotiations may differ from that of the Iranians and, frankly, from that of the rest of the world. Yes, they're exchanging messages. Are there real negotiations taking place? I doubt it. Should there be? Absolutely. Should we be happy that the administration at least is trying to look for it or says that it's looking for it? Yes. Are they really looking for it, or are they just trying to manipulate the oil markets to give themselves more time? I don't think we have clear evidence yet that there actually is a real effort, because a real effort will have to be based on a compromise in which the U.S. at a minimum is going to have to offer sanctions relief in order to end this war, rather than these 15 points that are just nothing more than a demand for Iran's capitulation, which simply will not happen. And I'll tell you one more thing that I think is going to come out of all of this. If the war ends under the current circumstances and we don't have some sort of a silver bullet that manages to turn this war around in Trump's favor, then one of the outcomes of this war will be that the credibility of American use of military force against Iran in any future talks will essentially have lost all of its potency.
Yeah,
and this will be a significant difference between what we have seen in the last 20 years or so. I personally don't believe that the threat of use of force has necessarily been particularly effective or useful in the negotiations that Obama did. It was actually the offering of incentives and concessions that generated concessions from the other side rather than threats of military force. But now we will have a situation in which no sane American president will ever try this again, because it was not worth it. It was too costly, did not achieve anything. So these threats no longer will carry that type of credibility, and it will make a significant difference on the entire geopolitical equation in the region. And I don't think Washington has started to wrap its head around what those changes may be.
And I think I can say with absolute confidence that the current administration hasn't realized that, because on the one hand, on the 28th of March there, you had C. Witkoff saying that about negotiations. And then the very next day, Trump added his two cents on negotiations.
I would only say that we're doing extremely well in that negotiation. But you never know with Iran, because we negotiate with them and then we always have to blow them up, whether it's the B-2 bombers or just terminating, as an example, the Iran nuclear deal done by Barack Hussein Obama, probably the worst deal we've ever done as a country, one of the dumbest deals we've ever done. But I terminated it, fortunately, otherwise right now they'd have a nuclear weapon. Then we did the attack with the B-2 bombers and we stopped them from having nuclear. And now we had to blow them up again. And we will I think we'll make a deal with them, pretty sure. Whether it's possible, we won't. But we've had regime change.
I mean, that's about as discombobulated and irrational as it can be in a single soundbite, where on the one hand, we're negotiating with them, but then we had to blow them up, and then we negotiated again, and then we had to blow them up. And oh, by the way, I got out of the 2015 JCPOA in 2018 because it was the worst deal, and they would have already had a nuclear weapon if I hadn't have gotten out, meaning that the significant constraints would have stayed, and somehow that would have turned into, I mean, it's irrational. That's the guy that we have, that whoever on the Iranian side has to negotiate with. How's that going to work?
I got to tell you. So, I mean, these mixed messages, again, I think can be explained partly by the president's personality, but also this kind of balancing act of trying to signal how tough and how much we are in control, while also saying, hey, we're negotiating, because if we don't say that, the markets will freak out. And then the time frame for Trump before his own base turns actively against his war dramatically reduces. And then he's in real trouble. So far, because of the fact that most of them are watching Fox News and are getting completely disconnected versions of reality, you still have 70% or so of the base of Trump supporting this war. But that's because they're ill-informed and misinformed by Fox News. But once you have gas prices really go up, once the markets no longer are buying this idea that talks are on the verge of success, and particularly if you have American body bags coming home because of a very dumb decision to go in with ground troops, then I think you're going to see a lot of the support within Trump's own base starting to collapse, and then he will really be in trouble. It's important to note that before that happens, he still actually has a chance of getting out of this war with a narrative that his own base will buy that says that he won this war. And they will point to statistics of how much they have blown up, et cetera, and that will work. But that's now. That's before oil prices have gone up to $7, $8 a gallon. That's before 500 American soldiers come home in body bags as a result of a stupid invasion of some island in the Persian Gulf. Once you pass that Rubicon, then I don't know if he ever has any chance of having a narrative of success being manufactured again.
But how can even that work? I mean, with the blowing up stuff and statistics, I mean, I get that part of it, but you can't have that part of it without having the Strait of Hormuz opened up. And do you see a path?
No, absolutely.
Under any circumstances, Iran is going to say, yeah, we're going to go back to the status quo ante?
No, they will not go back to the status quo ante, but they will open it up. If there is a deal on the table, that, in their view, ensures that this war will not happen again, which necessitates sanctions relief, several other measures, a non-aggression pact. If all of that is put together, which I think is a realistic plan to end the war, not one of these 15 points or whatever the Iranians have put out that are just maximalist demands. If you have something like that, I think the Iranians would be able to agree to it because that would enable them to translate the success that they've had so far into a new stable situation. That would be the smart thing for them to do. Could it be that they overplay their hands just like Trump did in the beginning of this war? That risk is definitely there as well. And we should hope that they don't, because it serves our interest to make sure that they do not and that we do not.
Yeah, well, I would love it if we could get both parties to not be dumb. We'll see what it is. But let's take a look at here's what was just released by the foreign ministry spokesman for Iran on the issue of negotiations.
We have had no direct negotiations with America so far. Since the last round of negotiations until now. The U.S. demands have been very excessive, unrealistic, and illogical. The meetings that Pakistan has with neighboring countries are, well, a framework they themselves have established. We have not participated in this framework. Can it be allowed that Iran and Iranians be in a position of confronting the illegal aggression of America and the Zionist regime? To use the available capabilities on the soil of regional countries while our armed forces remain silent? The duty of every authority demands that it respond to such cases with all. We have had no direct.
Yeah, and I mean, I think part of what he's referring to is what was in that True Social by Trump. They're going to hit all of these energy infrastructure and desalinization plants, et cetera, which he's reiterating what's already been said, that we'll do likewise in the region. How serious of a threat do you think that it would be for Iran to make good on that counterstrike?
Oh, it would be devastating. They clearly have the ability to do so. We saw how quickly they inflicted massive damage on the gas facilities in Qatar after the Israelis bombed South Pars. Gas field. And that is going to take 3 to 5 years for them to be able to rebuild and reconstitute. So they have the ability to do so in a very short order. The US's radar systems are already in a bad shape. You've seen that interceptors are running low, not just in Israel, but in the GCC states as well. We've seen that the Iranians have been using decoys in order to cause the Emiratis to waste a lot of their interceptors. So I think those threats absolutely need to be taken very, very seriously. I think this is part of the reason why Trump hasn't done any of these things yet. I mean, he threatened before to strike at the power grids and then he backed off. He's threatened before that he would actually blow up the oil facilities at Kharg Island and then he backed off. He struck Kharg Island, but not the oil facilities, because it's in his interest to make sure that Iranian oil flows. Because if it doesn't, oil prices will go up even further. That's part of the reason he already unsanctioned Iranian oil on the waters. He needed the prices to come down. So these are the undisputable facts and realities that everyone can see, and the Iranians can see it as well. That's part of the reason why they have so much leverage right now.
And you know, if we just kind of froze it right there, we said, all right, well, there's some, upset people in the Iranian government for obvious reasons. You've assassinated their leader and killed a bunch of other people and blown up their country. But they also realize that they can't go on forever like this. So they need an off-ramp too. The United States definitely needs an off-ramp for all the reasons you've discussed here. And if that's where we were, then maybe there would be some cautious optimism, maybe some threadbare optimism. But there's a lot of evidence on the ground right now that we're about to change the situation again, and this misplaced operation to try and bring more pressure to get submission from the Iranian government by having a ground operation. Now, you posted just about an hour or so ago on X a supposition of looking at some of the things that may have, you know, what some of the targets that may have been, some of the issues that we may be facing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in the last 10 days or so, we've seen increasing activity both on pro-Israeli accounts and Emirati accounts that they want to turn this war into about these three Iranian islands, Bunusa and the Lesser and Greater Tomes, who are in Iranian control. The Emiratis make a claim on them. It's a longstanding dispute that they have on this issue. And that this would be a way of liberating those islands, essentially. And, you know, some of these islands are strategically located, Bunusa in particular. But I don't see it playing that critical role in enabling the Iranians to close the straits. They're doing so not through the control of that island. They're doing so because of the control through missiles and drones over ships in the region. So, taking the island, I don't see it dramatically changing that equation. Could the U.S. calculate that we'll take an island and then we'll tell the Iranians you get the island back if you open up the straits? I don't see it working out that way, because once you've taken an island, essentially means that you have a bunch of American troops there that are stuck. The Iranians are just going to rain missiles and drones over them and cause massive casualties. And eventually the U.S. would leave without the Iranians opening up the straits. So it would be a huge mistake, perhaps even a bigger mistake than the original mistake of starting this war in the first place. But I do think that there's a political and a messaging value of this that the administration may be looking at, which is, so far this has been an isolated war in which an isolated U.S. and Israel have been attacking Iran, an illegal war, illegal from U.S. law, from international law. But if you manage to make it about the islands, you can achieve two things. On the one hand, you can say, hey, this is a U.S.-Arab-Israeli coalition against Iran. So, and the Emiratis would likely be part of this operation. And secondly, what you have seen in the last couple of days is that the Omanis and the Qataris struck their own deal with Iran. Instead of having a unified GCC position, they struck their own deal and they've not been attacked by the Iranians since. By making this war now about the islands, in which the GCC states tend to have their unified position in favor of Emirates' position, then you're kind of trying to force these countries to get back into the war, because it's no longer about how this war started. It's now about the islands, an issue that already has clear positions for all of the GCC states. Even if that succeeds, however, from a messaging standpoint, perhaps there's some value in it. But I don't see how it changes the fundamental equation of how do you actually win this war. So we're back on square one.
Yeah, and I know you're just about out of time here. So in 1 minute, I'll give you a really easy question to end on. Who can sustain this war the longest in a war of attrition? U.S., Israel, or Iran?
As it looks right now, it is the Iranians. That is not to say that they're not taking huge hits. It is not to say that they are, enjoying this or doing well. Not at all. There are massive civilian casualties, etc. But for them, this was existential. For Trump, this was about his ego. That equation favors the Iranians.
Well, we're certainly going to have to wait and see how that works out. I hope and pray that your ex post there about the possibilities of ground troops stays in the theoretical realm, and we just instead move to find a negotiated settlement there. But we send people to your ex post if you want to get more on Trita Parsi. Always great stuff. We check it regularly. Thanks very much for coming.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
We look forward to seeing you back very soon. Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
We'll see you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.